Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. The FA Trophy takes the limelight this weekend. 160 sides from step four in the FA Trophy as it reaches the first qualifying round. Phil Annetts is with us, wearing his new at FA Trophy facts hat, giving us the lowdown and the knowledge you need to understand the weekend's action. And of course, to impress your friends. My next guest is a new chairman, just over a month in the role. It's one he's coveted for years, but he's been sprung into it quite quickly and in stressful times. But it's clear that Spencer Gore is enjoying his new role and looking forward to building his childhood club, Chelmsford City, again, able to challenge and even aim for the Football League. Matt Badcock is our man from the Non-League paper this week with thoughts on the week's news, managerial moves, and what's ahead in this weekend's issue of the Non-League paper. Plenty to come, so time to sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. Oh, and so on to the FA Trophy we go. Last week, my next guest gave us a rundown on the first qualifying round of the FA Cup. This week, it's the FA Trophy first qualifying round. He's here. Always a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Mr. Phil Annetts at FA Trophy Facts. Welcome back, Phil.
Hi, Tim. Good to be back and talking about the FA Trophy this season.
Well, hopefully. First qualifying round, but as we mentioned a couple of weeks back, we did have some preliminary round ties this season. That gives us, 14 winners from those into this round, along with another 146 from step four.
Yes, it takes quite a while for the competition to whittle down the step four clubs before the other levels come in. But yes, this is the 160 clubs in total that will take part in the first qualifying round this weekend.
Yeah, so that's 80 ties. Friday night, I see three games listed at the moment. You can tell me different if that's it. a couple on Sunday, Phil, and the bulk on Saturday. Any of those that you have taken your eye that might see at FA Trophy Facts make an appearance?
Well, I will be attending one. Yes, I've decided to travel up to Racing Club Warwick, who are returning to the trophy after 22 years away, and they host Hanley Town. So it'll be interesting to see how Racing Club Warwick get used to being playing at this level of football again in the trophy where they've performed in the past.
Yeah, it's good to see some of those clubs returning. Of course, having not played some games in the FA Trophy for some time. The FA Trophy started back, 1969, 1970, season that was Macclesfield Town defeated by Telford United 2-0, I think, that one. Neither of those clubs in their new guises are going to enter into the fold into this year's competition as yet. Nice to see, though, that we do have, I think, four past winners of the competition this weekend taking part.
Yeah, we do, yeah. Four past winners, including Stafford Rangers, who had to replay their premier round tie during the week, who won through for the second time, and also Kingstonian, who one of the three ties they're going to kick off the first qualifying round on Friday night, and they take on Eastbourne Town.
I'm glad you're on top of the stats there, and you mentioned Stafford Rangers as well, because I'm still scratching my head on that one, because it was only confirmed, of course, Wednesday evening. Long Eaton against Stafford Rangers, the original tie ended 2-1 to Stafford. I think it turned out that they played an illegible player, and the FA actually ruled
that we had to have a replay, which ended, what, 2-2 after extra time, Stafford eventually winning 4-3 on penalties. It was a bizarre one, though, because, you know, normally all of that ends in expulsion. But in this case, I think the FA said that the club had done all it could to check the paperwork was correct. And indeed, all that paperwork had been lodged with the FA. I think the turning point, you know, I've been involved with the, you know, getting these permissions and loan forms and everything like that. But I think the permission, it all turned on a loan player, the parent club, whether the loan was a work experience or a youth loan. I've got no axe to grind with Stafford Rangers, who are a great club and looked after me when I was up there last season. But it still seems to me that the wrong paperwork was submitted, whatever the intention. And the club's own statement says, the wording of the permissions filed with the FA did not comply with the rules of the competition. I mean, that's hands up there, isn't it? So I'm not sure. I don't understand this reprieve. It just, as I say, leaves me scratching my head. Any insight there?
I wish I could provide insight. The machinations of the FA are a difficult thing to get your head around. It wasn't the only tie either, was it? Because Lansing and Southall had to replay their tie based on two players being ineligible. So it does seem a bit odd, because I've always believed that if that happens, then unfortunately the team ends up forfeiting the tie. But seemingly there's been extenuating circumstances that's allowed games to be replayed.
Yeah, and I don't want people to be working late nights on Fridays. I've done enough of that myself over the years, and early morning Saturdays and all that sort of thing. But I know the deadline is midday on Friday for all this paperwork to be in for players to take part in these rounds. So you would assume that there is an opportunity for someone to check. And I appreciate there's a lots of bits of paper going back and forth. But if we find out that the system doesn't work, then we may need to address the system, I think, because it's costing. It's having an impact on players, on administrators, on fans. You know, because again, everybody, there's cost to everything for people reattending replays and that, and it just doesn't look good, does it?
No, I don't think it does look good, because it just, from the outside, it feels like there's inconsistency as well, which is never easy to get your head around. And then there's teams that in the past that have been expelled and probably a little fuming that they got it kicked out when other clubs have had a reprieve. But, you know, it needs a bit more communication from the FA, I think, when they make these decisions as to why they've decided the team is reprieved and not actually expelled, or vice versa, so that we can see some consistency in the decision making. But unfortunately, I don't think we're ever going to get there.
Well, yeah, communication is something that's been worked on, I think. We mentioned the four previous winners then of the competition, but alongside those experienced campaigners, we've also got some first-timers in the competition as well this weekend.
Yeah, and quite a few first-timers. This revised structure of the pyramid means that we've got many debut clubs in the competition, and there were still 16 of them standing into this first qualifier. Now, some of them obviously only just started in this round, and we've got a few that are involved in ties where they're playing clubs who have not gone further than this round before as well. So a good example of that is Farnham Town, who are taking part for the first time, take on Flackwell Heath, who have only had one other campaign about 18 years ago in the trophy, making it only to then the preliminary round, which was a slightly different structure to the tournament then. But obviously that will result in one or other of those making the first qualifying round, second qualifying round for the first time ever, which is, you know, obviously something of note for that club.
Yeah, so it's, and it's that also, I guess, means with these debutants and coming in this round as well, that there's a large number of clubs that have never even won in this competition, which is quite a strange thing in any cup competition. With the history as the FA Trophy's got.
Yeah, so we've got a few ties involving clubs who have had one or two seasons and just unfortunately exited in the first qualifying round. But I think it's all about the fact that we've had these changes to entry acceptance, so it's opened up the number of clubs that can come in. And I think obviously over the next few years, if it settles down at this, then we'll get a bit more normality back to the competition. But obviously, every season there's, 16 or so clubs or more who will be promoted from Step 5 and You know, the way the pyramid has been restructured, it doesn't mean many of those will be getting to step four for the first time ever. So I guess we expect more debutants as the time goes on and more clubs taking their while getting their first victories under their belt.
Well, it keeps us on our toes. Well, you on your toes in particular. 80 ties in total then. An interesting number of repeats from last season's competition, which I guess, again, comes from all this reorganisation and regionalisation.
Yeah, I think it does, yeah. I mean, we've got five ties that are repeated from last year, and it's probably a factor of that this stretching out the step four clubs across three rounds. That means that there's a high likelihood that they will meet opposition from their league in particular, but also same teams that they've met in previous seasons. So, yeah, we have five last year that are happening this year. Sheppey United themselves will be the keenest to avenge last year's defeat, having lost 4-1 at the hands of Ramsgate. So that's probably the biggest defeat of any club of the five that are seeing each other again this season.
Yeah, that said though, there's only one tie seeing clubs that met more than once in this competition.
Yeah, that's the case. And again, because of all these influx of new clubs in, it's not surprising really. Yeah, we've just got the one tie that have met, where the clubs have met twice in the past. Sutton Coldfield Town and Newcastle Town meet each other for just the third time they've had in this competition, and they've had one win each in the past. So whoever wins this time will get bragging rights after that.
Yeah, and the magic of the FA Trophy, like the FA Vase, is the bringing together of non-league and the non-league family. But it's a competition. We like a bit of revenge, and well, Witton Albion, the chance to face Bradford Park Avenue, incidentally, Park Avenue under new management as well for this game, it's finally here, isn't it? Witton Albion fans have been, you know, crossing this day off on their calendar, not even knowing it was coming.
Can you imagine them from 26 years ago when they suffered a 2-0 defeat, thinking, right, I can't wait for the day we can get our own back on that.
That bright, sunny day in September, it's going to, oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just an interesting fact to note, isn't it, that these clubs have met in the competition before, and it is quite a while since they did so. So, yeah, Bradford Park Avenue did win 2-0 26 years ago against Witton Albion, and I'm certain there'll be some fans from both clubs who may have been at that game.
Yeah, well, yeah. But maybe some fans when Newmarket Town last played in the FA Trophy.
Yeah, so they're setting a new record for the competition, having themselves only ever participated in the trophy one time before, back in its inaugural season in the 1969-70 season that you talked about earlier. So it's 55 years since they last played in the trophy, and obviously that's a new record for biggest gap between consecutive FA Trophy games, and they take on Ware FC this year in what is only their second campaign.
And they're the sort of facts that we love, but of course, quirky facts are always my favourite. And it usually comes in the form of wordplay or alphabet stats. This weekend, we celebrate football clubs. We celebrate the letters F and C. Tell us more, Phil.
Yeah, well, it's one of three quirky stats I can tell you about, actually, because you know, these are the sort of things I like to dig out if I can. So Falmouth Town themselves have never faced a club beginning with a letter C in the FA Trophy, and Cinderford Town have never faced a club beginning with a letter F, despite 106 games between them. But this season, obviously, they're facing each other to cancel out that record that they both hold. So, yeah, we've got Falmouth Town taking on Cinderford Town as they both face the first team with that letter of the alphabet in the FA Trophy.
It's like being on Sesame Street. I can hear the count laughing in the background. Or something. I do say. So that's one quirky fact. Yeah. Where are your other ones? Where are your other quirky facts then, Phil?
Well, another similar one is Uxbridge taking on Phoenix Sports, which becomes only the seventh FA Trophy tie in its history where both clubs have the letter X in their name. So that's another one.
That's one crossed off. Yeah.
But my favourite, I think, for this round is AFC Croydon Athletic facing Beaconsfield Town. Both teams have the same nickname, the Rams. So this will be the first tie where they truly will lock horns against each other.
I like it, and you weren't sheepish in coming forward with that one. Brilliant as ever, Phil. Where can people find out more, keep up to date with all your stats and facts?
Yeah, so you can find FA Trophy Fact File on Twitter. It's called at FA Trophy Facts, and I've been this week tweeting all about individual ties, so you can see what stats and facts are for the tie that you're interested in.
Brilliant as ever, Phil Annetts at FA Trophy Facts. Have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you very soon.
Cheers, Tim. Thanks so much.
So let's chat then with a chairman, a new football club chairman, not a new football club, but not a man not used to being in charge. He took the majority shareholding of his club in the summer, I think the end of July actually, and whilst a seasoned business professional, I sense he's already experienced many things he probably hadn't had in his initial plans. But a first win of the league season midweek probably put a big smile on his face. It's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show chairman of Chelmsford City, Spencer Gore. Welcome, Spencer.
Welcome. Thanks very much. And yeah, you hit the nail on the head with that introduction.
Now, you know, I've been wanting to get you on since you took over at Chelmsford. Some would say, what, a sleeping giant, the club? It's a club well known to fans of this show for sure. It's been through a fair few regenerations in the past decade or so. I believe you tried to buy into the club a number of years back. But what was the hook that finally brought you in?
Well, the final hook was a simple text message from the outgoing chairman, Steve Shaw, at 7:45 a.m. on a Saturday morning, the 11th of May, saying, "I'm resigning as chairman and therefore we're selling the club. Are you interested?" You know, it was bad timing in terms of business. I was just launching in America. I had a lot of things going on. But, yeah, you don't turn down an opportunity like that when you've been trying to get involved for 12 or more years. So that was a hook.
And Chelmsford, why Chelmsford for you?
Oh, pure and simple. I grew up in a little village called Boreham, which is about 2 miles outside of Chelmsford. So it was my local non-league team. I used to go and support them when they're at New Rittle Street. I followed them when I didn't go to Maldon, but I followed them when they were at Billericay. And then I obviously been involved in various different guises over the years since 2008, helping out the commercial team. I've been on the board. I've been a major sponsor, the ground sponsor. So it's just something I've always been interested in terms of non-league football. I set a goal in 2012 that I wanted to buy a football club, and Chelmsford was the obvious choice. And I've been working towards it ever since.
And that's why I wanted to get you on, for you to say, because we get so many people that, you know, come in, invest in football clubs or want to take over a football club and that sort of thing. And they haven't got the background. They haven't got the pedigree that I think you need for non-league. Because as I mentioned, you've got a strong business pedigree, as you say, you know, a global pedigree. And that's what every non-league club needs nowadays, whether fans like it or not. We need to be businesses. But there's not too many similarities between a non-league football club and the businesses that you've run and still running now in the medical journal world, podcasts, webinars, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But you've got a love for the non-league game.
Yeah, and I was talking to someone the other day and they said, you know, you're a businessman, you're obviously not doing it just to throw money away. And I said, well, to be honest, I sort of am in a funny sort of way, because I've not come into this looking to make lots of money. I've not come into this looking to make any money. I've come into this as, this is my hobby. I love football. I've been involved in football playing from you know, as a kid, and then I was the football club captain at university, and you know, I've always been involved in football in some way, shape or form. And I've always loved trying to improve the clubs I've been at. So at university, we were the first London team to have a shirt sponsor, the first London team to have a UEFA qualified coach. I've always looked at stuff off the pitch as well as on the pitch. And you know, then to get the chance to get involved with Chelmsford, as I said, in 2012, I set a goal that I wanted to own the club. And I made a point of talking with my business coach about how I was going to make my businesses the vehicle to allow me to do that. So I've been working really, really hard for the last 12 or so years to create businesses that gave me enough cash to go and have a hobby that's an expensive hobby that I could do. And yes, of course, I want to run it in a very professional way, and I really want to get on top of the commercial side of it so we can maximise that. But if it still needs money on top of that, which it will do, then I'm happy to do so.
Yeah, and also I like your commitment to recognise those who already know the ins and outs, the intricacies of the club as well. You're not come in and swept the board clear and brought your best buddies in. You're using people that understand that non-league is a business, but also understand the unique, the fragility, the quirky bits of running a football club.
Yeah, I mean, twofold there. First of all, whenever I get any senior employees in my business, I always say to them, look, it's a 90-day plan you've got to have to start with. The first month, I don't want you to make any changes at all. I just want you to come in and really talk to the people that are doing the job at the moment and understand how they do it and why they do it. Second month, have a look at what they've done and say, well, actually, I think if you tried doing this, you might improve things. Or if you stop doing that, you know, we might be better off. And then third month, start making those changes. And that was also always my mindset with the football club is I'll come in and I'm not going to make any big changes. If there's some certain things that need doing and they're really easy, quick wins, then fine. Or if they're legal requirements, fine, we'll do them. But otherwise, let's really understand why the club does stuff, how it does it, and then how we can maximise it or stop doing it if it doesn't make sense. And then in months two and three, we'll start making those changes. And I wanted to have people on board that really understood the club. And so we've got David Selby has joined the board. He's someone I've known since 2008 when I first got involved at Chelmsford. And he's been involved with the club for as long as anyone can remember, I think. And you know, having that inside knowledge of what the club's done, why it's done it in previous years is brilliant. I will be looking to bring some new faces in that aren't connected with the club because I think, you know, I took my chief commercial officer down there a couple of weeks ago and he made a load of suggestions, some of which were really basic, but I hadn't thought of and the club obviously hadn't done. Mm. Because sometimes when you look at it with a new pair of eyes, you just see stuff that you walk past every day and you're like, yeah,
you're
yeah,
just
why
too close to
that?
It otherwise, aren't you? Yeah,
exactly that, yeah.
Yeah, we should also mention, I said things don't run to plan. The secretary Alan Brown as well has recently had a bit of a health scare, but he's on the mend now.
Yeah, he did. He had a mini stroke. Went into hospital, came out on the mend, and then had a heart attack to top it off. But thankfully, he is on the mend. He's another one that's been around the club for years and has been a brilliant servant to the club. He's been in touch with me today, trying to get hold of me today. To talk about stuff, because he worries about the club all the time. Certainly in the second week of owning the club, I didn't expect the secretary to be having a stroke and a heart attack. So that's sort of put some additional pressure on us. But because we were doing things the way we were doing, I had my operations director from EMJ in there mapping out all the processes. So we'd already started talking to Alan about what he did and you know that we talked to everyone about, you know, what happens if you get hit by a bus, does someone else know what you need to do? And so thankfully we'd already started that conversation and Keith has very kindly stepped in offered and agreed to be the secretary for the rest of the season. So that's the beauty of having these processes mapped out.
And that again, you know, shout out to all the other clubs, it's important that there is this sort of planning and as you say, process manuals that are being built because that they are businesses and things do go wrong. But well, take on the secretarial job, that's a tough one, that one.
Yeah, just ask Keith that. But what we've got at EMJ is we've created a high performance environment and people that work here genuinely want to be doing more and more to improve themselves. So you know, Keith offered, I didn't ask him to do it, he offered to do it first off. That's the beauty of when you've got your team of people, whether it's on the pitch or off the pitch, bought into to a common goal.
Yeah, and then you finally, I think the takeover effectively took place at the end of July. By then, obviously, you know, pre-season's already underway, budgets have taken place. So you talk about your 90-day plan, you probably didn't even have 9 days, do you, before the season starts. So you're sort of... You're feeling your way through, I guess. And when those fixtures came out, I mean, it looked like you were going to have a tough opening run anyway. Slough, Hampton, Tunbridge, Weston, Chippenham, Truro. Big trips as well. I think you have Weston away on a Saturday of bank holiday, then Truro last Saturday. That's all because you've got lots of turmoil, lots of stuff going on. It's tough on the minds, tough on the bodies. And that win was still elusive as well. So Tuesday, going around the M25 to Maidstone, probably took a lot of effort, but boy, was it worth it. A 5-1 away win. I'd imagine there's a great buzz in the camp since.
It was brilliant. I was actually just on my way. Because literally 4 months ago, I didn't know I'd be owning a football club. I'd made plans for this year that didn't evolve around being around for every fixture. So, and in fact, you know, I actually completed the sale of the club whilst on holiday in Greece, which my wife and kids were really happy about me being on Zoom all day, every day with solicitors and accountants. And yeah. And then I've been away quite a bit on business and pleasure. So I was coming back from Dublin on late on Tuesday afternoon, so I couldn't get to the game. But fortunately, it was on NLTV, which was brilliant. So watching it on telly with my son was absolutely brilliant. I say it's brilliant. The first 2 or 3 minutes were absolutely shocking because we went a goal down after about 70 seconds. And I was like, here we go. But no, to see us playing like that, what was particularly... you know, enjoyable was to see the effort that the team put in, even when they'd gone a goal down, having had that situation a few times this season where we've gone a goal down. So yeah, just the work rate is phenomenal. And Robbie, the manager, and Mickey and Adam there have put together a really good team of people that aren't just good footballers, they're really good people. And they work ridiculously hard. And so they deserved it. And I'd said to Robbie after Saturday, you know, we're going to win soon and then we're going to go on a bit of a run. I can feel it because we it's not like we're playing really bad. We're playing good. We're just not getting the run of it. But, you know, that's sort of what I leave, not sort of, that's completely what I leave Robbie and the guys to do is to deal with that. And I've been just really focused on, you know, getting the club up and running in the background. And you know, that has been monumental. I still, over a month after buying the club, I still don't have access to the club's bank account. I won't go into too much detail, but let's just say Barclays Bank aren't my favourite people at the moment.
It's complicated, yes.
Well, Steve Shaw, the outgoing chairman, signed the paperwork for me to join, and I sent it in, and then he resigned as a director when we bought the company, and Barclays said, well, he can't sign it now because he's no longer a director, even though he's a signatory on the account. So I said, well, who can sign it? And he said, well, you need two directors. I said, well, there's only two, and I'm one of them. So I've had to sign the paperwork to add myself as a signatory, which seems very bizarre, but hopefully by next week we'll have that. So I've been paying for everything out of my own pocket for the last 4 or 5 weeks, and you really do notice how much goes out of the football club on a monthly basis when it's coming out your own pocket.
The frailties of running a football club. You touched on Robbie Simpson then, manager since January 2020, I think. He's a season pro. He ended his playing career, I think, with Chelmsford. I remember seeing him play.
He did, yeah.
If you're thinking about promotion, thinking about competing maybe at the next level, national level, maybe beyond, you need that knowledge and understanding of what it takes from players within your circle. How important is that chairman-manager relationship going to be for the overall success of the club?
I think the same of any business. You know, you've got to have trust amongst your team. There's a good book by a guy called Patrick Lencioni. Talks about the five dysfunctions of a team, and the first level you've got to get right is trust. And I've known Robbie for 4 or 5 years. We've met up outside of football quite a few times, talking about business and various different things. And Robbie's someone I do trust and think is a brilliant manager. And I think he does things differently to a lot of managers. And we talk probably on a daily basis, if not every other day. But I trust him to do the job. And I'm there to support him. I'm there to offer assistance where I can. We've been talking about next season already yesterday and about, you know, what we need to do this year. And if we do what we hope we do, which is get promotion, what we'll need to do next year. But if we don't get promotion, what will we need to do to make sure we get promotion next season? And, you know, so we're putting in the plans for all the different eventualities already. And that's the sort of forward thinking that Robbie's got. And you know, we've got a very good working relationship and long may it continue.
Yeah, and I guess one of the the biggest problems of any new owner is managing expectations of a new era. Averaging probably around the 1,000 mark. You international break this weekend, maybe a few more through the doors this weekend. You've got Bath visiting in the league. It's always a good battle. What are the long term plans for the club? But you're only a month in, so I won't sort of hold you to these. 2 years down the line, but is it stability? I guess from the outset, is it?
For me, it's leaving the club in a better place than I found it. That's one thing I have to do. If I haven't done that, I've failed. Yeah, I want to leave the club in a better position. What that better position looks like, who knows at the moment? I was talking to my business partner at the football club, Dan Watkins' wife, this morning about some of the stuff at the club, and we were talking about the aspirations, and we're both very, very much aligned in that we want to leave the club in a better position than we found it. We want to really do some good in the community. But what we plan to do is sit down, and we've started doing is talking to the various different stakeholders and asking them what a win looks like for them, because it's no good me and Dan having a plan if no one else supports that. So we need to make sure that the fans are on board. We need to make sure that the women's team's on board. We need to make sure the walking football's on board. We need to make sure that the academy's on board, the youth team's on board, the football in the community, the foundation, and everyone is working towards a common goal that we all agree on. Now, for me at the moment, I've said quite openly that I'd love to get the club into the Football League, and I think that's definitely doable. I've said this year, one of the stepping stones is I'd like us to finish top of the league, because we finished second last year and we've got a slightly, albeit slightly, but a bigger budget. The start we've had isn't going to help that, but it wouldn't be particularly ambitious if we said we wanted to finish second or third, having finished second last season. So, I'm a very, very ambitious person, and I it's great having ambition, but you've got to have a plan in place to do that. And I think the club's been ambitious for a very, very long time. I just don't think it's necessarily had the right plan in place to support that ambition. And hopefully I'm the person that can pull it all together with all the different stakeholders and get the plan that works to get us into the Football League and as far as we can go, and leave it in a much better position than we found it.
Well, it certainly sounds like you're going about it the right way. Before I let you go, just over a month into it, you enjoying it?
I'm loving it. It's probably been the most stressful thing I've done. It's probably been the most time-consuming thing I've done. It's probably been the most expensive thing I've done. But I was talking to someone about this the other day, and I said, if I'd bought, I don't know, Man City or Liverpool or Arsenal, you'd go in there and think, there's not a huge amount of changes I can make that are going to improve us, because we're one of the best teams in the world. Whereas you go into Chelmsford, and every single time I go in there or speak to anyone, I'm thinking, I can improve this club, and I can do something quite simple that's going to improve it today. So literally every day for the last month, I've looked at it and thought, we're in a better position today. So in terms of leaving it in a better position than I found it, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, I'm already leaving it in a better place than I found it, in my opinion.
Well, hopefully you're going to avoid the buses, but I think for our listeners, we've all learned we're all in a better place than when you first joined. If we could talk forever, but I'll wish you well, and I'll thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Spencer Gore, good luck.
Thank you, Tim. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I'm happy to come back anytime.
Time then to head across to Non-League Paper Towers to welcome back once again to the Non-League Football Show the editor-at-large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Thank you, Tim. How are you?
I'm wet today. I'm part of the country that is underwater. I'm just fingers crossed that that's not going to affect too many games in the calendar. It was strange to see what the first week of September and certainly a number of midweek games that were off, weren't they, because of the weather.
Well, it's beautiful here, so I'm going to keep my head in the sand about any bad weather.
I can't deal with
bad weather at this time of the year, and the changes that it means on a Saturday when you get into the office and start looking through the fixtures and seeing all these PPs everywhere. So yes, ignorance is bliss from my point of view.
Yeah, it's not something I want to contemplate. There is actually something nice about wet, I don't know, wet ground. Not even, it used to be wet grass, so you'd smell that different smell. But even the smell of wet 3G or whatever we want to call it now, it sort of does reinvigorate you more than a bit of sunshine. So maybe it will be a good weekend for football, whatever the weather.
It's proper football weather. So that's what it is. It's we like, it's nice to have a little bit of sun at the beginning of the year, but really let's get into the mucky stuff and grind through the winter and the sort of part of the season. That's what gives all those happy memories, like the FA Cup coming up, yeah, and all that kind of thing. What is the FA Cup if it's not absolutely hammering down with rain, and everyone just trying to deal with the conditions.
Yeah. You don't remember the football when it's sunny. That's the thing. We got the FA Trophy coming up this weekend as well. But I mean, that's the big competition that we're celebrating this weekend. Looking across at the calendar, we've got 80 ties featuring the clubs from Step 4. There's some big name clubs involved too. But realistically, do you think any of them can have Wembley in their sights?
Well, it's always a long old route for Step 4 clubs, and as you say, so a lot of them, they sort of spend a couple of rounds knocking each other out before everybody else comes in anyway, don't they, as well, so which makes it even harder. But not, was only a few years ago with Halesow in Step 4 when they got to the semi-final a few years ago, in that sort of famous COVID year. So it can be done. Obviously you've seen Step 3 kind of Hornchurch winning the whole competition a few years ago, right? Sort of in bizarre circumstances around the sort of COVID and how they weren't playing in the league and they're only playing the trophy. But so it is definitely a long shot, but it's it kind of can be similar to the FA Cup these days. You can get a good run, get through a couple of rounds, and then when some of the bigger boys come in, obviously there's some huge clubs at Step 2 as well now, ex football league clubs, and but if you can get through to when they even just win nationally, clubs are coming, you can get like a really big occasion and a great occasion on your home patch, or go to a nice national league ground as well. And so there is that kind of incentive and that prize, and stranger things have happened in football, and that's why we love it. If there was no point, then nobody would enter it, would they? It should be some good ties this weekend.
Despite what some of my members of my family tell me, and indeed some of my friends tell me, that there's no point to non-league football or football indeed, but it is the thing that keeps us going. And I think you're right. You probably ask most of the managers, they probably fancy a day out at Wembley, but it does seem in the past, I think if you can have a decent run in the trophy, maybe quarters, maybe semi-finals, you can have some good games under your belt, but you really can gel a side together. And it's usually those sides that go out, maybe the quarterfinals, semi-finals, that have great or better league runs as well, don't they? Because they have that ability to concentrate in those last few weeks just to make the difference up and get maybe the playoffs and the promotion for their automatic promotion. So it's still an exciting weekend, as I say, for 160 clubs in those 80 ties. Wembley's on the radar, isn't it?
It's somewhere out there. It's somewhere out there in the distance. As you say, there'll be you looking to use it to keep league form going. And it's this sort of strange part of the year where some clubs have only played a couple of games in the league, haven't they? And because of FA Cup, FA Trophy, bouncing in and out and around and different things. But come the end of the season, it's often the clubs who do have good cup runs in, whether it's the FA Cup or the trophy, and we always see it in the VARs as well. You can sort of do it on two fronts, and it can often be a nice little distraction away from the league. If you can have a decent run when you're going well in the league, nice little distraction away from that every so often to kind of re-energise yourselves and get back into the league campaign when it comes around the next week. And it was FA Cup. You look at Cray last year, obviously went on and won promotion as well, didn't they? And had a good run. And I think, I can't remember when it was, I spoke to Steve McKim, it might have been in October, and they played about five league games because of FA Cup and FA Trophy. How well they've been going in everything. So it was, it's definitely one this weekend that everyone can kind of, pressure's off kind of thing, go out and play your football and keep bedding in those new signings and all that kind of stuff and see where it takes you.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about managers now, but who knows who's going to be a manager where come the quarterfinals or semi-finals of the FA Trophy? We're only just into September, but managerial moves, they're never far away, are they? Last week we reported on a couple of big names, Michael Clegg, Jimmy Dean getting back into the dugout, and also of another parting of the ways, Danny Whittaker leaving Bradford Park Avenue after a disappointing start there. This week he's been replaced by Craig Elliott, another big name. Managers just can't leave it alone, can they?
This is it. I mean, it's tempting to say it sort of seems to happen earlier every year, doesn't it? But that's probably not the case. Case now, it probably does happen all the time in sort of August and September where there are changes. And kind of think back to all that work in the summer that goes in, all the pre-season, all those training sessions and bleep tests and all that kind of thing. And suddenly a couple of games into the season, it's all changed and a new manager is coming in and to put different ideas in and change players, and you know, it never stops, does it? So there's always a manager waiting to come into a vacancy when it arises, because there's so many out there who want to do it, and there's not enough jobs. So, but I mean, you know, Craig Elliott's record speaks for itself that he's had down the years, Shore Lane and through with other clubs as well, and Buxton and Boston, and you know, he's always done really well. So I'm sure Bradford PA would be pleased to have someone of his sort of experience and calibre in there.
Yeah, and we're talking about maybe FA Trophy runs. I think his first game's probably going to be this weekend against Witton Albion. We heard from Phil Annetts earlier. I think 26 years since Witton Albion got beaten by Bradford Park Avenue. So it was a lot on the game. But yeah, Craig Elliott comes in, man with cup runs, as you say, with Shore Lane, Boston United. Yeah, I remember FA Cup runs, FA Trophy runs, I think, as well, FA Vars runs. Yeah, maybe he's the man to do it.
Yeah, definitely, and that's it's kind of a nice one for him to come in as well, isn't it? For this early on in his reign there, to kind of see what everyone's about in a cup game where the points aren't on it, and they can you know, try different things and try and find the right sort of right recipe to get the club going forward. Because as you say, it's a, you know, really big name. We obviously see them much higher up the pyramid in very recent seasons, and you know, this isn't a kind of a round of the trophy that they've been used to coming in at. You know, so they've got a bit of rebuilding there to do as a club anyway, haven't they? I'm sure that Craig can. He's done it before with other clubs and taken them up, and I'm sure that that's what he wants to do there as well.
Yeah, but as a big name comes in, another big name departs. But over at Matlock, Nicky Law parting company by mutual consent there this week. Winless bottom of the table after six games when he was relieved his job. It also proves that, you know, despite your track record, sometimes the formula just doesn't work at a certain club at a certain time.
Yeah, he's, as you say, someone who's been, you know, incredible sort of career in management and out of that as well. So he's been head of recruitment as well, isn't he, in the Premier League. And all the players, you think, so many players that came through him, played under him in his career, and what they've gone on to now. And yeah, some still playing sort of championship level football and things like that. So yeah, it's just kind of, obviously sometimes, as you say, things just don't work out, and it just doesn't quite happen. And yeah, and a club like Matlock, who recent years been, you know, always been looking up the table, it's been a tough start down there. So 2 points from the first six, difficult opening, and they'll be hoping that someone else can come in and revive it and get them going.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not all about results as well as a manager. All changed too at Farsley Celtic. The outgoing manager, Clayton Donaldson, departs. I think he had three early season wins, but he relinquished his charge along with his assistant, Danny Ellis. And in charge for the midweek draw at Southport, certainly with director of football, old friend of the show, Pav Singh, I think becomes the highest ranked manager of British South Asian background in the football pyramid. So not sure if that's going to be a long-term appointment or he's just there to steady the ship. But again, it's that magic formula. It's just so hard to achieve at clubs. It needs to be work both on the field and off the field.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, they've sort of started all right for Farsley on the face of it, haven't they? With, you know, 10 points from the first seven games. You know, they've got to draw this, obviously, draw the other night against Southport, as you say. But, you know, Colette and Donaldson have won three of the first six. So, and done well last year, keep them in the division. So it was a surprising one, but I guess we're not always. You say there's different factors that go into it. We don't know what was going on, conversations that were being had there, and they decided to make the change. And yeah, obviously if Pav sort of can impress now, then I'm sure he'd love to take the opportunity to take the club on.
Also, a big change at Bridlington Town, bottom of the Northern Premier East. They take on Trafford this weekend in the Trophy, where there is free food for under-16s, I will add, as well, if any under-16s in the vicinity are listening. The outgoing manager, AD Costello. In comes Denny Ingram, takes over. There's also an incoming new CEO as well after new ownership in the summer. It's difficult to keep track of managers, but it's also difficult to keep track of people off the field. And it's very easy for, you know, fans, and particularly fans that don't even make it to every game, to consider, you know, Saturday being the big day in football. But every day in a football club, in the modern day football club, is so different, and from day to day, there's so many changes going on. Whether that's personnel, whether that's administration, whether that's just future rules that are going to come in next year. It is. I'm lucky enough to have worked in a number of industries. It is becoming one of the most complicated industries to work in, I think, football.
Yeah, I think we've seen it. You know, a lot of change and. It throughout the pyramid in quite a short space of time. You know, look at how some clubs at step five, step four are running themselves so well, so professionally. And, you know, that's not to say that clubs weren't doing that a few years ago, but it was kind of a different thing, wasn't it? It was much, you know, it was kind of much more sort of, you know, a lot of the community sort of stuff was kind of happening, but not kind of like in the sort of the manner it is now, and with all sort of the facilities that have been upgraded, and that's kind of like the knock on that allows clubs to do, and the sort of the growth in teams that sort of clubs have now as well. It's you know, there's so much to do, as you say, outside of just turning, you know, a game kicking off at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. That's kind of a very small part of the week for a lot of clubs, and that's right through the pyramid, and say that comes from a lot of investment and things like that, which has been great. And but it is it's not easy, and that's one of the sort of difficulties that non-league's going to have balancing is kind of as it's in this kind of phase where there is a lot of professionalism coming in, and a lot more people are kind of needed to be relied on. You know, volunteers, there's a lot more demands on them, isn't there? And it takes up, you know, demands in terms of not only time, but also in kind of responsibility as well. And that's a kind of a tough tightrope for everyone to walk, because, you know, some people it's you know, don't have the time or the inclination sometimes, you know, to do it, because there is so much on it now, and so much expectation as well from, as you say, we on the outside kind of come to a game, watch it and go away and don't always think about everything that has to go into it. So so it's definitely been a landscape, and non-league has changed quite significantly, quite quickly in the last, yeah, probably even five years, not even 10 years.
I'm a strong advocate, having started in non-league as a volunteer very 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 many years ago for volunteers. But as you say, this is the whole structure. I often refer back to the world of education and the way that schools have had to develop, and you've got, you know, number of staff and support staff and all people in a paid environment there now has ramped up, and maybe that is something that non-league needs to look at. Because, yeah, as we spoke with Mark Stupple last week of AFC Stoneham, you know, when you've got something like 120 sides operating under one club banner, That's a lot of people, and you do need some, you know, maybe some generals to organise them and put it more on a business footing, just to make sure that the club survives. One other managerial change this week. We did mention Matt Halliday was placed in temporary charge at Wroxham last week. Well, that's been made permanent this week. So good luck to him. I'm sure there'll be more managerial changes in the coming week, of course. But looking at the leagues, the National League, what are we now, 6 games in? Gateshead still atop with Eastleigh close behind. It's early days, of course. But in a league as tough as this, it's great starts that go a long way in ensuring that you have a decent season come May.
Yeah, definitely. a great start does just breeze confidence through everybody, players, fan base, and makes you feel, makes everything feel really good. And then at sort of that opposite end, if you start early on, it's like, oh, playing catch up already. You know there's plenty of time. It's a bit of a stress, but there is an awful lot of games to be played. As you say, that it's. Yeah, it's been an interesting opening to the season. It's kind of starting to formulate that. I think what the manager often say, don't look at a game until don't look at the table until 10 games in. So you've got another 4 to go before we can do it.
Cool. Talking of the National League, TV, we spoke about the Zone earlier on in the season, the great fanfare was, 7-year deal, wasn't it? It's still not quite ready yet. Interesting, though, that the National League, still running on NLTV platform at the moment, they've announced the games that they're going to feature on that TV platform in October. We've mentioned Eastleigh and Gateshead. And they're not featured in the 4 games that have been announced so far. I don't know what we can take from that, but you would have thought that they'd want to feature some of those clubs that are setting the pace early on.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was thinking, it makes me think when we pick picture games and for what games we can have in the paper, and sometimes I wonder if people sometimes go, why don't they pick that game? definitely sort of a tricky juggling act sometimes, but I think sort of ultimately those sort of games will, as the season goes on, they'll become more and more. And I think that's sort of, I think what TNT did really well was getting everybody kind of on as well, didn't they? Giving them their kind of moment. So, bit of a surprise, I guess. But I don't know all about logistics and all that kind of thing. And I think it's all being ramped up quite quickly. I've seen DAZN sort of putting out job adverts and things for people to come in and take on. Parts of it sort of specifically mentioned sort of National League in them. So they're obviously building their infrastructure as quickly as they can. And from a manpower point of view, but at the moment it's on National League TV, and they are doing these enhanced games. They had Sutton last weekend, didn't they? And saw Aaron McLean was on there, and Luke Goward, and sort of familiar faces from that point of view. So it's I think it is a 7-year deal, and they're seeing it as kind of a thing that's going to grow and build and take a bit of time. And I guess we're in that sort of slight transition at the moment that we haven't sort of been used to over the last recent season, because it's always been that sort of traditional TV deal, broadcast deal that's kind of kicked everything off. But there's obviously quite a few step 2 games that could be watched on National League TV in midweek as well, and that's kind of the vision for it, is that eventually you're going to be able to go on to whether it's National League TV platform or the Zone platform and have your pick of a game, obviously around the old favourite of the broadcast, blackout hours. But in 7 years' time, will that still be there? Who knows?
Who knows? But step 2 will be, hopefully. In the National North, we've got Scunthorpe already, 7 points ahead of the chasing pack after only 7 league games played. They're at home to Warrington this weekend, but they've certainly set their stall out, haven't they?
They certainly have, and I think if you're, it is early days. But if you're another team in the National League North, I think you're looking at thinking, you say 6 wins out of 7, and they've only conceded 1 goal as well, yes. Which is shows that they are, a mean defence, and that they're not going to be giving any favours out for sure. But it's kind of. You'd expect Scunthorpe to kind of be up there and sort of traditional sort of name and sort of where they've been, and obviously they've got Andy Butler in the summer, and you know, what a start they've had. And again, just breeze confidence throughout everybody, because they'd had sort of one of those clubs, if they didn't get the right start, had a couple of tricky defeats early on, it would be like, ooh, sort of grumbling and sort of thinking, well, they're not quite there. But just, you know, the fact they've started so well, started so positively, only conceded one goal, and, you know, beaten some decent sides as well, or got some decent results against sides you think will be up there, then it does, does show what they're all about. And at the moment, they're going to be the ones to catch.
They are indeed. In the National South, this weekend, what have we got? We've got third place Slough Town hosting Hemel Hempstead Town, who are currently top. In second place, Torquay United, they've got a trip to Welling United. You say very early days in the table and the standings, but again, you it's better to have the points on the board. I'm sure, Weymouth would certainly like some of those. Seven defeats in seven for them down the bottom of the National South. Still plenty of games to play, but have you been able to take in any National South games yet, Matt?
Oh, I haven't actually got out just yet. One of the closest ones to me, Braintree, sort of had the audacity to go and get promoted, so I can't watch after watching them in the National League now. I have been down there this season. But no, I will be getting out in the coming weeks and seeing some. And as you say, Hemel absolutely flying at the top there, and Slav had such a great start last weekend. Did they make it a year? It was a year unbeaten at home, which is a remarkable record. And Scott Davis, sort of early in his managerial career, I think he's still playing as well. So, you know, doing a fantastic job down there. And they meet this weekend, as you say, which is again an early one, but it sort of has that, oh, it's quite an interesting advertising kind of clash. It'll be pictures in the non-league paper, as people hopefully expect. But yeah, down the bottom already, it's kind of like Weymouth, as you say, that's a sort of a difficult start. We only scored two goals and in seven games as well. And yes, it's only a 6-point gap, but once those gaps start opening up even early on, it is, you know, it can become a long way back. And St Albans haven't won a game down there either, and St Albans aside, sort of, you know, traditionally kind of been pushing a bit much further up. And it'd be amazing what a win can do. You know, look at Chelmsford, got all the way in the playoff, finished the second last year, playoff semi-final, lost in that sort of epic 4-3 I think was it 4-3? It might have been 3-2. I actually went to it, so I should know. But the thriller of a game against Braintree, where Braintree were 2-0 up, and I think it was 3-2. Yeah, Braintree were 2-0 up with, you know, kind of seconds ago, and Chelmsford suddenly turned it around 2-2 and are back in it, and then lost in extra time. But they had a lot of players move on in the summer, and it's been a tough rebuild for Robbie Simpson, and then a sort of a slightly slow start where kind of struggling to pick up points, but then on Tuesday night they're going to get their first win, and in some style beating Maidstone 5-1. And then, you know, Maidstone, you know, similar kind of thing, had such a great season last year, get to the playoffs and sort of struggling to get going so far this year, take a defeat like that the other night, and, you know, it's all kind of doom and gloom. But, you know, again, one game, one good win, and suddenly it can, at this time of year, everything can feel a lot brighter. And that's what everyone will be trying to do this weekend.
But it is one game, isn't it? That, you say Maidstone, I think they conceded four prior to that evening, and then they conceded five against Chelmsford on the night. And it just proves that, you know, we can talk about all the stats, all the standards and that sort of thing. Yeah, we mentioned Lewis in step three, at top of the Isthmian Premier, the highest placed side with the 100% win record in place. Five wins from their opening league games. But they played in the FA Cup last weekend, held at Harefield in the first game. Then in the replay midweek, they exit on penalties to Harefield United, aside from a couple of levels below them. They're going to be thankful to get back to the league on Saturday. They got, I think, a trip to Carshorton Athletic. But, we talk about that magic 10-game mark. It doesn't matter what time of the season. Anybody can beat anybody, really, can't they?
And that's why, as we were saying earlier, that's why we like it. Because if everybody thought that Lewis would just brush Harefield aside and nobody would bother turning up, would they? So it's that just shows, and credit to Harefield, a great couple of results there. But then also to get through as well, and on they march in the FA Cup, and and Lewis will, as you say, return to the league and try and get back to that running, that winning run. And if they can do something this season and get promoted, then a defeat at Harefield on a Tuesday night in early September will be the last thing on their mind. So, yeah, it's that's why we turn up every week and we're so invested in this this level of football.
Indeed, before I let you go, we should mention that as well as the non-league paper every Sunday and in the shops on Monday too, you can get subscriptions of the paper, get those delivered to your door, or a digital subscription, you know, straight to your phone, your tablet, computer, however you want to read it. But also, an essential for every non-leaguer is that annual football pyramid poster, and of course the essential annual tome as well, the non-league club directory, all available via your fabulous non-league paper. And probably about time to start thinking about ordering one of those for Christmas for all those non-league fans in your family. I presume you've got millions of them already, Matt, for yourself and
oh, well, I've got them all. Yeah, that's my wallpaper. Yeah, so it's a good present as well. I get a little discount of 50p per post, I think. So that's a good. They make great wrapping paper as well, actually. But the pyramid, I mean, it's a vital resource.
Yes, it is.
So sort of you can't believe how many times you have to use it, really, especially these days. There's so many changes in the league. So you think, where are they gone? And you can just see, and it's a nice record to keep if you've got them down the years as well. It's nice to have them all and see not only how the teams have changed and where teams have the teams that have sort of dropped into non-league, the teams that have left non-league, what they've gone on to, but also kind of how the pyramid's actually changed itself as well. And I think we didn't want another, our designers didn't want another league, you know, at step three. I'm not sure if we'll get it in, squeeze it in on the same line, it's going to start giving him a nightmare. So, but yeah, that's out there. And as you say, paper's out Sunday as well, with hopefully plenty of goals and action and celebrations from the weekend as well.
Yeah, FA Trophy this weekend, league action, I guess FA Cup draw as well. Matt Badcock, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We'll speak to you again very soon.
Thanks, Tim. See you soon.
And that then is it for this week. Don't forget to get involved on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.